Welcome to Energy Matters, where we explore alternative health in the Pioneer Valley. I'm your host, Caroline Rutterman, and I'm a Reiki professional and intuitive in Northampton, Massachusetts. For the past 9 years, I've been teaching people how to use their intuition and helping them reduce stress and anxiety. Together, we'll talk with other practitioners and learn how they bring health and healing to the Pioneer Valley. Let's do this. Hey, welcome, welcome, everyone. You are listening to Energy Matters on WXOJ 103.3 FM Northampton. And we have a great show for you today. We are here interviewing Mark Vecchio of theconsciouslearner.com. And welcome, welcome, Mark.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you're here because we were emailing back and forth for a little while. And, you know, as I was kind of checking out your website of theconsciouslearner.com, you know, and reading your blogs, and I was really impressed with your depth of knowledge and your writings. And, you know, it seems like you have a really that you're a really deep thinker. And some of the things that, you know, you were kind of discussing on your website, which is, you know, of course, what you do for a living, working with adults who have ADHD and, you know, coaching and doing somatic therapy and all these really, really cool things. You know, this quote that really stood out for me was, you know, with ADHD, big, deep, interesting things come easily, but the day-to-day business of life keeps you perpetually sweating the small stuff. And I was really, really impressed with like how clear and succinct you made this really huge concept and into a very understandable way of the ADHD mind. We're just diving right into it. So go ahead and tell me a little bit about what is ADHD?
That's the hard part. It's very hard to define. Maybe I'll start with the part that is public and you know orthodox. It's a definition. ADHD is a diagnosis, and it's essentially in two parts. There's attention. You know, is the person daydreamy or do they lose things? Do they lose track of things? Distractible, and then there's hyperactivity. You know, are they bouncing up and down? Are they constantly on the move? And those two can come together. You know, having a hard time paying attention to one thing and then bouncing out into something else, which looks like distractibility.
Right. And so ADHD stands for
attention deficit hyperactivity disorder.
That is pretty straightforward in terms of, you know, I think that when I was growing up, I feel like that term, that diagnosis, as you describe it, was kind of just starting to come into vogue and, or at least into my awareness. And there was always somebody that I could pick out. I was like, oh, my little cousin. There's always that one person that, like you said, like was very kind of always losing stuff, very easily to distract. It doesn't make them any less brilliant in any way, shape or form, but there was a distractibility that is very interesting.
It is, and it's I like that you mentioned that, you know, often brilliant. Well, maybe I'll get to the twice exceptional, but I want to continue with the, you know, this idea of a diagnosis. As you say, you can tell when you see it, right? ADHD on some level is what it looks like. And the diagnosis is about it's about behaviors. When I work with adults, but it most often gets diagnosed in kids, and then you know, somewhere between 10 to 65% of kids who have ADHD will have it as adults, right? But it's performance oriented and normative oriented. In other words, if you got a bunch of kids in a classroom and most of the class is, you know, doing one thing, and you know, a few kids are losing stuff in their book bag or, you know, not following directions, that's marking them out. And if that happens if that happens persistently enough to actually disrupt their functioning, that's when you start to see a diagnosis.
So when you say disrupt their functioning within a classroom setting,
yeah,
is usually how that's...
If it's interfering with their life, right? If it's interfering with the quality of their work or their ability to do it.
And there's probably teachers out there listening who are like, oh, yes, Caroline. Oh, yes. So we kind of know what it looks like when we're younger or when we see somebody in a classroom space, if we've gone through public school or through a private school setting in a group learning environment. What does that look like for adults?
It's harder to see in adults, largely just in my experience, because adults have learned how to hide it because they've learned that it's bad.
How do they hide it?
Because it is what it looks like, they try to look different. they try to look consistent. They work extra hard.
Gotcha.
ADDers are, I just want to qualify the term ADDer. It's not a label. It's a shorthand, you know.
I kind of like it though. It sounds like it's a club.
Yeah, exactly. It's more like a club.
Yeah.
ADDers are amazing jugglers. If you remember the spinning plates act on the Ed Sullivan Show.
Sure.
ADDers are the best at spinning many, many plates. And they're paying a price on the, in their system. To be able to do that, they're exerting extra effort and they're hyper vigilant about. Or if they're not able to hide it, they really suffer.
Yeah. How does the suffering or how have you seen people suffer from not being able to be hyper vigilant and get kind of that hiding aspect of. What's the downside of it?
Well, the downside is statistically, there ADHD is a marker for higher risk in being fired from your job. Unemployment. You'd be amazed. Prison is a higher. You've got a better chance of eventually going to prison if you've got ADHD. Doesn't mean that people are gonna. It's gonna happen.
Right.
Car crashes are more prevalent. When there's ADHD involved.
So tell us a little bit about what you do within that kind of scope of ADD and ADHD and that whole world. What's your role?
So people find me when they're looking for an ADHD coach. And I help them. They come because they're not able to do something that they want to be doing. They're not able to manage things the way they want to be managing. So I help them do that, and that's where I start to depart from thinking of it as a performance based issue, because I can't really help that unless I help them get their work done.
So what is, if it's not a performance-based issue, if it's not in a classroom setting or in a workplace environment, what's the flip of thinking of it as a performance-based? Like how would you reframe that?
By asking the question and the diagnosis is what's happening and what does it look like? I'm asking the question, a lot of, I think other people are asking the question, how is it happening? And that we can work with. What is happening inside the person when they're having trouble sitting down to do something, or they're having trouble, focusing, or when they're having trouble stopping from focusing, from shifting from one thing to another. And that's what the process involves, is getting into that.
So can you tell us a little bit about how you got into this work? Like what drew you into working? Because I feel like all the people that I've known over the years who have had ADHD have also been extremely creative folks. And maybe that's just the people that I have in my life. I don't know, but I've always seen them as extremely smart and really, really creative. And I don't know, they're just very interesting folks. How did you kind of come to work with, what was it about this population of folks that that you saw was somebody that you wanted to work with?
Well, you flatter me, because I had a got diagnosed with ADHD in my early 40s. So thank you for saying I'm so creative and smart.
You're extra smart. You're extra creative.
Thank you. For all of my creativity and smartness, I kind of stumbled blindly into it. And it came out of suffering in a period of my life. Talking about, you know, vocation, what it is that I'm doing, some person once said, I think it was actually in one of my coaching classes that I, when I was training to be a coach, said that I think it was vocation is the intersection between passion and what something that the world needs. So my first passion was teaching, and I was teaching, and I was trying. I wasn't a perfect fit, and I worked really hard, and I was a very good teacher. And I finally got a position as a full-time. I got a full-time position at a college. And because I, let's just say, because of a fit of emotional dysregulation, I was unhappy with the way that that had happened. I quit. The second I got it, I left.
Wow.
And it was a hard time. And so then I tried something else, and that didn't work. And eventually I tried to come back. By the time I came back, the things at the college had changed, and the fit was even worse. So I needed to figure out something else that I could do. And I loved working with students individually. I loved working with the way that they thought, the way that they learned. And so I sort of thought about tutoring, although I knew that there was a problem with that, because what I did with students didn't look like what people usually think of when they think of tutoring, which is, you know, helping people with chemistry and math, right? And so I learned about coaching. This is the stumbling part. I started looking toward one thing, and then I discovered coaching, and I looked into that, and I said, that's a much better description of the way I'm actually working with people.
Yeah.
Through coaching, I discovered ADHD coaching, and I got trained in that, and that's where the ball started rolling.
So that's really interesting. I feel like it's so cool to see how people kind of find their vocation and find their passions. Just mm-hmm. sometimes just getting out there and you try this, and then you try this, and then you just, it's a kind of a bloodhound kind of thing. What is coaching versus tutoring? I know they're very, very different, but can you tell us a little bit more about the role of some, like a practice like tutoring versus the role of somebody who's doing something bigger like coaching? I don't want to say bigger because I don't want it to demean either or, but what's the difference?
It's more a matter of perception. When, a good tutor is usually doing some kind of coaching. But when people are thinking about, my college kid needs tutoring in something, the thought there is usually, the picture is usually of somebody helping them with their homework and helping them get it done.
Right.
And maybe helping teach them, sort of like like an assistant teacher, helping them with the concepts. And coaching is much more about helping the person do what it is that they want to do and give them, empower them and help them discover and build up the skills and draw on the resources that they already have to be able to do something.
So it's a little bit more of a focused kind of bigger picture.
Yes, it's more focused on the person than the task, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. Yeah. Absolutely. So what does your coaching look like? What it like, just on kind of a, if somebody was, you know, a fly on the wall, what's a session, like a ADHD coaching session look like?
Yeah, I thought this question might come up. I'm going to tell a story and answer this. Yeah,
okay.
Somebody called me, a super smart guy called me and was having trouble, you know, getting his work done. And he's the first and only person to ask me for references. He said, you know, could I talk to people whom you've already worked with? So I said, let me get back to you. I, you know, contacted three people I had worked with and asked them if they would mind being referenced. They said, sure, no problem. And so he contacted these three people. And we talked the following week. He called me back to, you know, tell me what he had decided, or if he had any more questions. And he said, I've decided to hire you because the three people that I talked to, when I talked to each one of them, it sounded like they worked with somebody completely different. Like, it sounded like they were talking about three completely different people.
Whoa.
So that's what it looks like.
Whoa. Well, that answers my question and also does not answer my question.
Exactly.
I loved your example that you used a moment ago about how your coaching looks different for every person that you work with. Can you tell me a little bit about how you understand, how do you, if everyone looks different, if all of your ADD, let me rephrase that question a little bit. If everyone that you're working with experiences ADD differently, how do you understand that for them? How do you do your coaching if everybody's experiencing ADHD differently?
On the one hand, well, just on the question of do all people experience ADHD differently, I want to say the answer is, and certainly in the coaching community, the answer is no, right? For there are how many forms of ADHD are there? There are as many as there are people who, you know, have it. On the other hand, there are commonality. There, you know, there are some things or some ways that people are experiencing that are more like ADHD than you know something else. So, I am looking for rather than what it looks like. I'm looking for how they're experiencing what's going. They're generally coming because there's something that's, you know, going wrong. They're not able to do something. So I'm interested not in what's going wrong, but in how they're experiencing the activity when they're doing it.
Oh.
And what's actually happening. So you'd be amazed at how important that question is. What is actually happening?
So what is actually happening?
What's actually happening, well, that's what's different for all the ADDers, or it takes different forms. But what's actually happening are things having to do with time, things having to do with working memory. It's going to come back to those commonalities. But one of the things that's often actually happening is that the person is experiencing, let's say, have a term paper to do, leave it to the last minute, and can't get it, hand in half of something and can't get it done. What's actually happening is a lot of avoidance and anxiety leading up to that.
Okay.
Right. And then toward the last minute, let me jump ahead to when they come to me. So they tell me that story and they say, I'm sabotaging myself. I must be lazy. And that is what it looks like from the outside. It looks like that when I quit my job, I was self-sabotaging, right? And I certainly sabotaged my position.
Because from the outside, it looks like you're not getting your work done until last minute.
Exactly.
Or not at all.
Yeah, exactly. But the problem with putting it that way is that that's not the intention.
Right.
And that gets left out. So when... let me think of an example. So, for example, someone just recently came to talk to me and is having trouble, is in school and is having trouble getting reading done. So it looks like, it might look like avoidance. You're not getting your reading done. But he sits down to read and he wants to do it. And then he will find himself. He will discover that he's not looking at the book anymore. So that's when we have an opportunity to find out what's happening in that experience.
Okay.
Right?
That is really interesting. That's very, very interesting. You mentioned something about time,
mm-hmm.
an experience of time within the ADHD framework of thinking.
Yes.
What does that look like? Because I feel like I'm hearing things that I'm like, am I ADHD? Like, I don't think that I am, because I'm right. I'm actually, I feel like I would have been diagnosed if mm-hmm. I had. People usually get diagnosed, right? Like, it's ends up being pretty.
Not girls.
Really?
Not as much, because especially in grade school, if you think about a sort of cultural, you know, what do we expect, you know, polite little girls to look like, you know, docile, quiet.
Sure.
And if they're daydreamy, that's kind of romantic culturally, right?
Right.
So it does, they're not bouncing off the walls. Girls more often would, if they do get diagnosed with the inattentive type of ADHD without the hyperactivity part of ADHD. So it's not as visible.
That's so interesting. Yeah. That's really, really interesting. So it tends, ADHD would tend to be like more of a boy's type. I mean, it's funny because it's like gender norms and all that kind of stuff get so complicated very quickly, but that's really very interesting.
Yeah.
It's a trend.
What were we just talking about?
We're talking about what if somebody is experiencing time within the ADHD framework, and if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Energy Matters. I'm Caroline Rutterman, and today we are interviewing Mark Vecchio, who is an ADHD coach, and for adults, we're kind of talking about it sometimes as the childhood example, but it's really, your work is really for adults.
Yes.
So, so what is it, look like when time, what is that experience of time?
Well, what it looks like and what the experiences don't really, well, there's a distinction. So what it looks like is lateness a lot of the time, right? It looks like last minute-ness. It looks like, leaving things. It looks like, planning, your time just fine and then failing to execute it, right? So it, in that sense, it looks like failure, and it often is experienced as failure. It's like I set it up, and once again, I'm late. This is one of mine. This is one of my favorites, yeah. So, you know, I'm working with somebody who... I'm working with a few people, but one is coming to mind, lateness. We're talking about this, and, her planning is really good. You know, it's actually superb executive functioning the way she plans. And then she finds herself late. So we're digging into this a bit and finding out what's actually happening. And that question usually brings up, I'm not doing such and such. Well, but that's not what's happening, because that's not happening. So what is happening when you're not getting up and going someplace? What actually is happening in that moment? And an awful lot is happening most of the time. In this person's case, there's often an amazing juggling act. There are many, many things that are, you know, competing for attention that she's actually managing quite well. You know, in terms of juggling lots of things. But here's the experience, well, sort of experience, it's not subjective experience, it's more objective. What's happening is that she is going according to her internal sense of time. There's a kind of internal story time. I'm engaged in something. There's a story to what it is that I'm engaged in. I'm doing this, right? And then there's clock time.
Clock time.
Yeah.
We all know about clock time.
Right. Clock time doesn't really like stories, doesn't care about stories, has no stories.
That it just secondhand ticks. Just keeps exactly. on ticking.
Yes. So time experience is, in ADHD, can be thought of as time insensitivity, but it's not time insensitivity. It's clock time insensitivity.
I like that.
Yeah.
So when you are doing your ADHD coaching for somebody who is, you know, experiencing time a little differently, kind of working with their own internal time frames and these things and juggling all this stuff, how does your work fit into that?
It depends on what's going on. In this particular case,
because the objective is to try to, like, quote unquote, be on time, to be on clock time.
I'm about to bring in a concept that I haven't talked about yet, which is the idea of flood.
Let's talk about flood.
One of the things that I did when I was teaching was I created a small mythology curriculum at the college, and I taught myth, and I started to look at how I, as somebody who, you know, had these kinds of symptoms, and the people that I was working with, through the lens of the flood myth, things looked undifferentiated, right?
Are we talking about the flood myth, like Noah's Ark?
Noah's Ark, exactly.
Other flood myths that...
Every culture on Earth has a flood myth. Oh. Or it's every culture but three.
Okay, right.
Okay. Something crazy like that. Yeah, okay. Flood is a universal myth theme. And what happens is the world gets flooded, and so you can't see any of it. So I'm going to jump around a little bit, so just let me know if you...
I'm listening.
Yeah. One of the things that is used as an ADHD strategy for ADHD is called chunking. So you have a term paper, right? As long as it's a term paper, it's overwhelming, right? It's kind of monolithic. I've got this term paper. I have the experience. I know from experience that I have failed these before. There's a good chance I'll fail it again, or I won't be able to do it the way that I'm supposed to do it. So theoretically, we help the person chunk it into little bits, right? Well, if you think about the flood, there are no chunks. It's just one big body of water.
Hmm.
So, and it's sort of literally overwhelming, because the word whelm means, you know, water, right? So it's a feeling state where I can't distinguish the parts of this. So it's very difficult. Let's, you know, say a project or, you know, getting someplace on time. I can't distinguish the parts of this in sequential order, right? Easily, because there's that functioning part, and why that's happening is a whole other story, but that's the way it's being experienced as it gets reported. And so that was happening in this case. I think I can come back now to the lateness thing. So what we did was, I think I have a bunch of little stones in a bowl on a table in my office. So I put a bunch of stones and I said, all right, here are the events of the day, right? Laid them out. And we went to the stone where she got stuck and got made late. Actually, we ended up going before that, because there were too many things that she had to do at that point where she actually experienced getting stuck. Mm. So we went back before that and noticed that there were too many things going on at the same time. And that came back to, you know, bite her later on in the process. So we went back to that place where there were so many things. And I just asked, you know, what are the parts that are most important? And what are the parts that feel stressful? So then we did a hand motion. It's going to be really good radio. Ready? Put your hands back to back together, right? And imagine that against your palm are the stressors, right? And clear them out to the side, to the sides.
So the motion that he's showing here is basically the backs of his hands are together, and it's almost like you're pushing the air out away from the body.
Yeah, to the sides. Yeah, like to the parting sides. The waters.
Yes.
Okay.
Parting the flood.
Yeah. So that's doing a few things. For one thing, it's a somatic gesture. Right?
So there's an energetic thing happening right there.
Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So we haven't even started talking about somatic gesturing yet, which is, I'm very excited now. continue.
The somatic part of this is that the body is now doing this. And when the body does it, it changes the experience.
Rather than just the experience of the mind?
Of the mind, yes.
Okay.
Exactly.
So let me step back just so I make sure I understand so this person is experiencing time. So you go back and set the sequence of the events throughout the day,
mm-hmm.
find out where exactly she's stuck or where she starts to feel that anxiety,
right.
or where there's too many things happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you find that place during the duration of her day,
mm-hmm.
you bring in this somatic gesture.
Yes.
Okay.
This is one thing to do.
Okay. Yeah. So how does this somatic gesturing of putting the backs of the hands together and pushing out, how does that influence You mentioned kind of parting the waters. Mm-hmm. What's going on here? And how does that shift for this person?
I'm trying not to resort to technical, or research things. Muscles have psychological functions. At least that's one way to think
of
it, right?
Oh yeah, 100%.
Okay, good. I'm talking to the right people.
Some people say, yeah, we have a very savvy listening audience out there. Some people also say the issues are in the tissues.
Exactly.
A lot of our trauma is stored in our body. It's all kind of within that framework.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's basically just engaging the voluntary muscular nervous system. And that's sending signals up into the brain and changing the thought. So the next thought that came was, first of all, there was a feeling that came as soon as she did that, of relief that she was, in the act of imaginatively and somatically moving the stresses off to the side, away from her.
That's very interesting.
So we stay with that moment for a little while.
Okay.
And once that gets to settle in, the thoughts change. All of a sudden, wow, I've just had the experience of, I'm paraphrasing, I've just had the experience of sort of moving stresses aside. Oh, I can say no to those things and only do what I actually really want to do. And saying no is not an ADHD talent.
Right, that's a universal skill.
Yes, it's something that that we're pretty bad at to begin with. It's not so much the act of saying no, it's the act of being able to differentiate. The chunking is basically saying this chunk is this chunk and not that chunk.
Right. It's not all one flood.
Right.
It's exactly. Not all one like watery existence.
Yes.
There's smaller pieces.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I think, all right, I'm sort of processing because there's a lot within that. How do people, when they start to identify this and go through this process and create these somatic gestures, how does that shift their issues for them?
It's giving the body a new experience. I mean, probably we need to talk about what shifting the issue for them means. But I'll start by saying it's a way of giving the body a new experience. And one of the key components of that experience is a feeling of safety. It's also a feeling of empowerment. So now that these stresses, I'm moving my hands, off to the sides again. Now that these stresses are off to the side, I feel much bigger in comparison to the things that are now in the middle that I'm choosing to do.
That's very interesting. This kind of reminds me a little bit of Qigong.
I'm sure.
Yeah. We were just starting to bring in a little bit more about how the work that you do around somatic coaching relates to the ADHD coaching. You were starting to talk about identifying the problems, not problems, because I don't know, maybe just the stumbling blocks that people who have their ADHD mind or the ADDers, as you call them, and how kind of identifying where the areas that they want to improve in their life to streamline, and then finding that and then creating, bringing in these somatic techniques. So what is, because that's a whole other side of your business. What is somatic coaching?
Somatic coaching is one of the major ways that I work. When I was teaching, I'd already begun to notice procrastination is obviously something that's going to happen with, my students. I taught college, and I came with a functional definition that seemed to be pretty useful. That procrastination was when my student intended to do, like really fully intended to do one thing, then his body just did something else.
That happens when you're young.
Yeah. It happens when we're middle-aged.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Can't limit that.
So I started to think of it as a mind-body issue. And, that's how I got into, somatic work. And let me hop over to one of the real just bedeviling problems with ADHD and being able to understand it. It's a now you see it, now you don't problem. You know, an ADDer supposedly it's like executive functioning disorder. But you put an ADDer into an activity that she absolutely loves, like genuinely loves, executive functioning is superb.
Oh,
often,
yeah.
Right? So it's when it shows up, it's a problem. And that's pretty much how you diagnose this. Does it show up enough to interfere with their life? Right? But it doesn't mean that the executive functioning is not there. So I got into somatic work, and I worked with, is it okay for me to say the name of somebody?
Sure.
Locally. I worked with Beth Dennison, who's phenomenally smart. And she took a concept from Dan Siegel, I think, called the window of tolerance. Window of tolerance is somatic concept that if I'm walking on the street and I walk past a woman walking a German Shepherd and I feel fine about German Shepherds, I'm within my window of tolerance. If all of a sudden a truck backfires, right, both me and the German Shepherd and probably the woman are going to go, why? So there's a little spike outside the window of tolerance. Beth Dennison recoined this, and I love the way she did this. She called it the window of presence.
Right?
So what's the window within which I am able to be here and feel like I'm present? So I took that right into my office, and I started asking people, when talking to them about what they were experiencing, I would pause for a moment and say, just a second, how present were you feeling in that moment? How present are you feeling right now as you remember that, right? And lo and behold, I found that the window of presence was barely open whenever they were having trouble doing something, right? So that's the part of so when I said before that,
and sorry to interrupt you. When you say the window of presence, mm-hmm. do you mean that that's their like full attention moment of being present here and now?
Yeah,
like just straight. That's what that is.
Yeah, any like mindfulness meditation, has a very clear understanding of what presence is, and when we. Generally, when we pause to ask, how present am I feeling now? We're usually able to tell.
Yeah, right.
One quick sign if someone's not feeling present is just quickly ask them, are you aware that you have legs? You'd be amazed at how often the answer is, I wasn't, but now I am.
That's a very good test.
Yes.
So how does the somatic coaching fit into the work that you do, or how much does it relate to the ADHD coaching that you do on a kind of the day to day?
Well, I'm almost always thinking about it. I might not be using it in a sort of overt active way, but I'm always thinking of it because I. In order to be able to think of, I've said before that I started to think of this as a body-mind problem, and emotions are right in between those two.
Of course.
Right? So how I use it is to ask the question, when are those three aligned and when are they not? When they're not aligned.
So body, emotions, and mind.
Right.
When are all three of those aligned?
Yeah. The question before that is when are they not aligned, and what happens when they're not? So let's just say my body and my mind are just going in two different directions. I'm daydreaming and tapping my foot, right? My emotions goes off on its own and goes off on their own, and suddenly I start to feel overwhelmed, or I start to get into an emotional cycle that starts to feed itself. So now when that's happening, all of me, head, heart, and limbs and, trunk are not all here. So I'm not really experiencing my own presence. I'm not here, calm, looking from where I am to whatever it is that I'm trying to think about or interact with. That's the way in which I think about it when I'm working, and then it's just a matter of individually. To go back to the example of the woman and the little stones of where she was during the day, when there were presents mostly closed, when there were too many things, take the hands, move it apart. There's this new experience of, oh, what a relief. I'm better able to be here, see more clearly what it is that I have in mind and what it is that I'm actually, and be able to feel what I'm feeling, right? Logical thought does not convey any weight as far as importance. So prioritization is often a matter of weight in terms of how I'm feeling it. So I'm going to put an ellipsis there and see where you want me to go from there.
Yeah, that's really cool. So is the somatic coaching, is it essentially all kind of simple physical exercises to help realign the body, mind, and emotions?
No,
are they all physical exercises?
Not all physical exercises. A lot of it is just asking the question, you know, what are you noticing now in your body? It's a joke in the somatic experiencing community that, you know, you can be a somatic experiencing practitioner if you just repeat that over and over again.
Right. And it's the main practice is like, where are we in these three checkpoints at any given time?
Right. It's bringing consciousness into the body.
That's the conscious learner.
Exactly. .com. Right.
Very cool. Very cool. So we only have a couple minutes left, but you know, there was something really sweet on your website. You do have a really great blog, and there is a great blog post called Home Base, where you talk about the idea that home, you know, this something that's like a sanctuary or a solace. And you kind of discuss drawing upon the feeling of home as being really important to use. How is that feeling of safety and sanctuary or solace or home, how does that affect our work and our studies and what we're trying to bring into this world?
The feeling of home includes senses like this. I am here, right? As opposed to I have to deal with such and such, right? I'm not just here. I'm feeling warm enough. I'm not shivering. I'm well enough fed. It's self-care things, right? I can feel where I begin and end, right? I have a sense that I'm just here, and I'm feeling safe and secure. And ideally, when we feel at home, that's how we're feeling. Mm. We're feeling, I'm here. You know, we dress up, go out to work, and you know, deal with all kinds of things, and then we come home. And home is where we get to, one of my friends
let said, our hair down.
Exactly, let our hair down. Right?
Yeah.
One of my friends said, you know, she gets home after, and she looks like a, you know, soup. She looks like a very intelligent, very competent person out in the world. She comes home, she turns into a blob.
Oh, no.
we just sort of melt back into the space. And if we feel supported when we're, you know, that's an ideal feeling of home.
That's very funny.
That enables us to feel present, right? We can be here, and there are when we don't feel like we have to be doing something else, we're just able to be here and just be at home right here, right now. Mm. We're able to function.
Yeah. And yeah, I really like that a lot. So how do, you know, and then I guess that when we're able to be, to embrace that feeling of home and we're able to function within that space of body, mind, and emotion, then we can kind of start doing the tasks that we want to do.
Exactly.
It's like if we have this huge project or if we're trying to build a business or write a term paper or whatever, then when we have that, when we're embracing that feeling of home, we can do that.
Yeah, I want to be cautious about thinking that it's as easy as feeling at home when I'm trying to, say, build a business. Because
right.
The moment I'm trying to build a business, I'm no longer merely at home.
Right.
Just sitting, you know,
right.
Sort of peaceful with my, you know, fingers connected. You know.
Yeah. There's a little bit more to it than that. Yeah.
But it's an experience that the body, heart, mind needs to be able to have. And one of the things that I've noticed with ADDers is that they rarely have it. And in fact, if you ask someone with ADHD, can we just sit here still and do nothing for 30 seconds? That's really hard. Mm. Not only is it really hard, it's agitating. Mm. So that's one of the things that I sort of have in the back of my mind is there a way, you know, what are the obstacles here to being able to feel at home. I do have one story that I can
sure.
tell about this. I was working with somebody, this was a while ago, and there were just so many things she had to do. You know, there was laundry on the floor and this and jobs that she had to do. She was a freelancer. And so we were talking, and I said, okay, at the end of the session, I said, all right, your homework, your assignment for this week is live to our next meeting. And as long as you survive to call in again next week, you've done your task.
Okay.
And being able to, that's the equivalent of sort of moving aside stressors, right? That somatic gesture. And this was a phone conversation. I worked both in my office and by, you know, remotely. And she had an experience of just being able to be there without having to do anything.
Hmm.
And that was like this experience of home.
Cool.
I'm not at work. I'm home.
I'm here.
Yeah, I'm here.
I love that. Well, I think you're doing really good things in this world, and it sounds like you're helping people as individuals. And how can people, if somebody is kind of working on their own stuff within that framework of ADD or ADHD, how can they find you?
They can find me if you're in Pioneer Valley and you Google ADHD coach. Love in a wonderful way. I come up right away.
Yeah.
So that's one quick way to find me.
Fabulous.
And I've got two websites, just depending on how you get to me, theconsciouslearner.com and consciousomaticcoaching.com.
So theconsciouslearner.com or say the second one more time.
Consciousomaticcoaching.com.
All right.
I'm not too different practices. I'm one person.
One man.
Yes. Two doors.
Fabulous. That sounds really great. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today and talking about what you do and, you know, sharing a little bit of some strategies for people to bring, you know, the health and their own creativity into this world.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. So you've been listening to WXOJ 103.3 FM, and have a great afternoon and evening, everyone. Take care.